There's all kinds of problems in science, but it still remains our best tool. And I'm not saying he thinks that science isn't a good tool, but he's just some asshole with an axe to grind because he's not been taken seriously. He's just some asshole with an axe to grind.
I don't know this cat, man. I have no idea who he was, you know, and I have almost zero knowledge when it comes to physics. I mean, I'm really dumb. Really, 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 really dumb. But what I walked away from is the realization that for the last 42 years of my life, I've been pretty damn cocksure about what conclusions I've drawn based on where I was in the moment. And I found that to really be the case, even, you know, very recently, outside of Mormonism, where I have adopted this science, this concept of science, this worldview of science, as to say that's what I believe in because I am atheist and I'm a hardcore atheist, and I still am. I am atheist. But I recognize those same thought patterns and that same arrogance now applied to the science that I just don't understand. And even if I understood physics, I wouldn't understand, you know, a lot of things about consciousness and perception. And I've been listening to this week, Sam Harris came out with an episode on consciousness that I found really interesting. And Russell Brand did one on consciousness with Brian Cox. And real interesting stuff that starts dovetailing with some of these concepts where, you know, Brian Cox was talking about intuition and how that there's now starting to be evidence of it being, you know, connected to those people who are able to really be in tune with their system, with their membrane here between the heart and the head and your brain, interpreting all these signals from your body. And the more somebody can kind of become in tune with that, you know, those are people that they're finding would be referred to as kind of having a gut instinct in these types of things. And my understanding is Brian Cox is a real physicist. Maybe not.
He's just some asshole with an axe to grind.
But it at least causes me to want to push pause on my own personal confidence in capital T truth on things, and at least be open to other ideas, and at least not be so arrogant and closed off to say, okay, I think I have the answer to how the universe works, because I know I don't. And I did have that same opinion when I was Mormon. I had that same opinion when I was stridently ex-Mormon. I'm now feeling I've broken out of that a little bit more. And now I know debt. And I like that position a little better. And I want to approach the world with more questions than answers, because I think there are more that we understand less than we portray.
That was beautiful, Matt. What I'm getting from what you said was that you love dick.
This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Hello, this is the real Stephen Hawking again. Did you miss me? I don't understand why the infants are so stupid about science. I mean, that Randy guy is alright. And sometimes I understand what John Hamer is saying. But the rest of them? I have no words. And I always have words when I don't have words. It's kind of what I'm known for. Anyway, here is part two. Don't make fun of scientists.
The point he's making is nobody's taking my wild theory seriously, and it's because they are dogmatic and rigid-minded, and they can't see the beauty of my theories.
Well, and I'll give you that. If I haven't read about the psychic dog study, but I think it would be brilliant and I could get on board if it was like this performance art piece as a political statement to back up what we're talking about, but clearly that it was not the case. So that's disappointing.
And I think you're right, Randy, that, and that's why I said earlier, that it seems like he's had his feelings hurt from years of being rejected and ridiculed, but I still think that there's value in examining what he's saying.
The best lies are half truths. Unless you're Trump. I don't know. I don't even know how that works, but let's move
that's
on.
Pretty
let's
good. Go, yeah. We were more than an hour in before we brought up Trump.
35 seconds.
Yeah. Pretty good. All right. Yeah. He'll finish up with the 10 and then we can just end watching this because we're not going to get through all of this.
Fifth dogma is that nature's purposeless. There are no purposes in all nature and the evolutionary process has no purpose or direction.
By the way, this is not supposed to be a dogma. This is a,
it's like a philosophical thing,
a feature of science. So in other words, so he's saying that the idea here is that nature's purposeless. No, that's a false conclusion that people sometimes draw from I think modern science. Let's go back to physics, Newtonian physics. Newton, when he is going to say that force equals mass times acceleration of gravity or something like that, people then ask him, you know, why or what's the purpose of that? And his answer is, my job as a physicist here is not to tell you what's the purpose of why that would be the case. The job is to explain the data. And so that's the vast, vast difference between modern physics and all of the physics that went before that, Aristotelian physics. Aristotle, his theory of motion was entirely about purpose. In other words, he was trying to say, explain why such a thing would happen. So his theory of motion was that the reality, so you throw a rock in the air and it goes back down because rock is solid and it wants to go to the center of the cosmos. And because its purpose is to, you know, be in the center compared to the other states of matter, you know, salt, you know, air, fire, water. So the liquid, the gaseous and energy or whatever, the solid wants to go down. That is an explanation of purpose and question. Newton says, look, we're going to pull back from this and just completely, check this purpose question and put it to the side. I'm no longer going to even talk about that. I'm going to talk about how it works. And so that's been the modern idea of science. So I don't think it's a dogma to say that, among scientists anyway, if they're thinking about it, that it's that science, that everything is purposeless. It's rather that science is not about asking questions of purpose. We're just ignoring that.
So to your original point that you made at the beginning, John, which was how he sort of, the way that we're talking about religion here is misappropriated. I think he does the same thing with science here. I would say that I have seen an atheist argument be the one that he used, right? That you're saying that nothing has meaning, no purpose. Science does not make that argument. Like you said, its job is to not find meaning.
Right. But I think the data and to understand that's what science's job is.
It just now, is.
Sometimes like an enthusiast, what'll happen is like you say, Randy's talking about excitable fanatic atheists who will draw a conclusion. So they'll say, okay, I've looked at all the data and I have concluded that everything is meaningless.
Yeah, and that's where I agree with Randy on this.
Yeah, but so
lazy. It's irresponsible to conflate science with this sort of argument.
So John, is it correct for me to summarize what you're saying as he's right? Science doesn't look for purpose,
He says that science he concludes that everything is purposeless. I'm saying that actually he's wrong because science has made the deliberate choice.
I thought you were saying he's right. They don't because they're not supposed to. They've decided
No, he's saying they concluded it was purposeless. That's a completely different thing than saying we are not questioning purpose.
We're not interested in looking at purpose and talking about purpose.
That's what I'm saying that Newton is doing. And so this is a problem that even, let's say, people who consider themselves to be skeptics think. So if you were an actual skeptic, in my view, about when you're talking about purpose, you would say, I am incredibly skeptical that you will ever be able to say, you know, or show or prove or anything that anything has any meaning. That is a completely valid skeptical position, and skepticism is the most defensible position that anybody can ever take. But a true skeptic then also has to then acknowledge that they don't believe that you can prove that everything is meaningless, right?
Yeah, it's proving a negative.
Right, exactly. And so a skeptic, but a lot of people don't understand skepticism.
You have no idea how many times that word is misappropriated.
Yeah. And so what he's done here is misappropriated that. In other words, he's saying that science has proved everything's purposeless. Science is not involved in that at all. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Next one.
Dogma six, the biological heredity is material. Everything you inherit is in your genes or in epigenetic modifications of the genes or in cytoplasmic inheritance. It's material. Dogma seven, memories are stored inside your brain as material traces. Somehow everything you remember is in your brain in modified nerve endings, phosphorylated proteins. No one knows how it works, but nevertheless, almost everyone in the scientific world believes it must be in the brain.
I really think as I'm listening to this and thinking about it more, it's not so much that these are 10 dogmas of the material worldview as much as these are the top 10 reasons why people have rejected his claims.
Wow, Randy.
And scene.
Okay. Yeah. Because when you understand what he's saying about morphic resonance, these are very specifically tied to his claims about morphic resonance. They're relevant when you're talking about morphic resonance. They're not totally relevant in other scientific studies or inquiries that you might be looking at. Maybe. I don't know.
I would say then on number six, genetics is material, right? I don't know. So maybe I agree with my dogma on that one. I don't know.
Yeah.
He says later that all genes can do is produce proteins. It can't explain how the morphology totally works out.
Right.
And that's actually true. Like, we don't know everything about that, and we're learning more about it. But like, if anyone could find anything, you know, I mean, people are open to whatever they could possibly discover. It's not a stumbling block. He's acting like these are all stumbling blocks, and they're just conclusions that are made by a significant proportion of scientists based on just all the data that's come in and how things have worked out.
And maybe it's like a lack of willingness to explore ideas that can't be proven, that there isn't any way of getting data for. And so that's where you cross the line from science to pseudoscience. And people say, look, okay, like what you just said, Randy, you're right. The genes create proteins. There's more going on in the morphology of form than just that, but we don't know what it is. So let's just stop and say, we don't know. Where he's moving forward and saying, maybe it's something outside of the material. Maybe it's some cosmic, you know, morphic resonance thing. And that's where people are pushing back and saying, look, we don't have any way of proving that. So stop it. And he's going, oh, you're not going to play games with me. It's because you've got this dogmatic view of the world and you're not willing to explore past what.
But he's also, I don't think that he's actually proposing an alternate way to.
I think he actually
argues empirically. So we'll get to it, but I think that when he actually presents his positive theories, he says, and more times we're seeing those results. Mm. Well, then, okay. then essentially he's arguing for empirical legitimacy.
But he's also not arguing against the scientific method or arguing against.
So if he wants to have more experiments on these things, I mean, I think that, like Randy says, people will be open to experimenting on whether, he said that memories are going to be how the number seven or whatever, memories are housed outside the brain too. So maybe there is more, you know, you're not just, you're, you know, this, maybe if we have a notion that your entire, you're like a robot with your computer is the brain that's inside the body. And if you were to take the whole, if you had perfect surgery and you could take your whole brain out and put it in somebody else's body, you'd still be you. It may well be that you're, you know, some things that you think of, you perceive as constituting you and think about maybe are attached to other parts of you and nerves and things like that, that are elsewhere in there, but we don't know.
Well, they've had those studies where like the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere are separated from each other and each one thinks that they're an individual self, but they're different.
Yeah.
So there isn't even like a single you, right?
It's not quite that simple because you cut the corpus callosum.
Yeah.
And so the right hemisphere can't communicate with the left hemisphere, but different sides of the brain control different ways of how you communicate. So they don't see themselves as two different people, but if you ask them questions and say, you have to write down the answer or you have to say the answer, different parts of the brain are working and they discover that they are practically two different people in there, but they're not consciously aware that they're two different people in there.
Right.
So it's not that simple. Like there's
sure. But if they found out that you were actually
all of me,
all of me,
if you're actually maintaining like all of your feelings of love in the pancreas or something like that, if they found that out, scientists would be very happy because they'd win the Nobel Prize that they found. Right. You know? So anyway.
All right. Next one.
Dogma 8, your mind is inside your head. All your consciousness is the activity of your brain and nothing more. Dogma 9, which follows from Dogma 8, psychic phenomena like telepathy are impossible. Your thoughts and intentions cannot have any effect at a distance because your mind's inside your head. Therefore, all the apparent evidence for telepathy and other psychic phenomena is illusory. Mm.
So that's where the rails were, right, Randy?
but again, you don't like disagree that that's an assumption that most educated scientific people are making, that this stuff is impossible, so it's not even worth talking about.
They're not. I don't think they say it's impossible. Well, some may say it's impossible, but they say, look,
I'm going to go back to our Krista the psychic things and get when you guys were talking about how it's impossible.
I'm talking now. So,
but even now you would say it's impossible, and you say
I'm not
that it's
saying it. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying it's improbable, very improbable, based
on what we know. So
on 100 years of psi research, they've been doing this for 100 years, and they want it to be true, and they haven't produced shit.
Okay, so this is where I think that he's conflating science with...
Bankman's different.
I think he's conflating science with philosophy here. And what I hear you guys doing is we're all trying to attach meaning to data here. This particular argument is attempting to attach meaning to data. Because the scientific data doesn't... Like, I mean, you can measure, yes, of course, your brain is in your head. But like the way that even humans conceptualize the brain and like the heart, that is not how science looks at the brain and the heart, right? It's
different. But I totally agree with you that this is why the messenger is so wrong. So in other words, this idea of self is not particularly... all of our sense of what even constitutes ourself isn't particularly well explained for us right now with our metaphors of the robots and also our, you know, like our, like the kind of like low levels of like scientific building blocks that are talking about electrons firing and all those kind of things. In other words, we're aware of how it's all functioning in order for us to have this kind of perception. But he isn't talking about like the question of the self and what is the self, is there a self, all those kind of things. He's questioning whether we have a material, what I think of is a material sixth sense. You know, in other words, is there some sort of material mechanism that is allowing our, you know, like some sort of like particles that are existing outside of our brains to actually look in the back of other people's heads or stare at them or understand that, you know, like that we're connecting to some other, to humans all around the world or whatever we're doing, you know, which is, I think it has nothing to do with you know, it's still materialist. In other words, I think that he is still totally caught up in materialism because he wants to find material effects, which is to say psychic stuff, right?
But John, the data doesn't lie. My dog sits in front of the door every time I leave.
You can't explain that. You can't explain that.
How can you explain that?
Yeah, I can't explain it.
Because I wrote a whole book on dog animal telepathy called Dogs That Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home, based on evidence that dogs can tell when their owners are coming home. Millions of people have had this experience. I've done experiments, and sure enough, at least some dogs really can know when people come at random times in unfamiliar vehicles.
Mm.
We film it all. We have all this objective evidence. But the very fact that I'm suggesting telepathy might be real is something that provokes this kind of hysterical response that it must be woo-woo pseudoscience.
You can't explain that. You can't explain that.
So when I do the tests, then with the dogs, then it involves filming the dog, the place the dog waits, having people come at random times, come in unfamiliar vehicles, so there's no possibility that it's a routine response. They can't smell people from many miles away. They can't identify the sound of an unfamiliar taxi or other vehicle. And these dogs still do it, and it's all on film. So I would say this is evidence for something which lots of people believe exists. And the reason that I concentrate in a lot of my work on what I call the mysteries of everyday life, what you call humdrum, is precisely because these phenomena are classified by most scientists as paranormal. Well, para means beyond. They're saying they're paranormal, which means they're sort of spooky or woo-woo. My point is they're not paranormal at all. They're normal, everyday experiences for most people. What's paranormal is the claim that these things don't exist, a claim made without evidence on purely ideological grounds.
Yeah, I find that interesting, John. Both the Joseph Smith stuff about materialism and him as being a materialist as it relates to those things. Yeah.
He was a dualist in materialist clothing.
Yeah.
He
clothed his dualism in materialism.
Yeah.
It's a really fascinating thing to observe, I think, to like really get into. Yeah. Did any of you have that book, Joseph Smith as a Scientist? It's fucking awesome.
No.
It's not very long. It's an old book. It's out of print. Mm. But my dad had it and I read it and blew my Mormon mind.
Does he still have it?
I don't know. It was in he's moved to a different house after he got married.
We'll see if we can find it.
You can get a copy.
That'd be fun to explore.
Yeah.
So the last one, there's one more, number 10.
Okay. And dogma 10, mechanistic medicine is the only kind that really works. That's why governments only fund research into mechanistic medicine and ignore complementary and alternative therapies. Those can't possibly really work because they're not mechanistic. They may appear to work because people would have got better anyway or because of the placebo effect. But the only kind that really works is mechanistic medicine.
Have you guys heard of the book The Power of Eight? Yeah, I say stay far, far away from that, Randy.
I've heard of The Secret. He's totally into The Secret.
It is kind of that. So the Power of Eight, the author Lynn McTaggart, I think.
Oh, I thought you'd say Lin-Manuel.
I don't know who that is. Oh, no.
Lin-Manuel Miranda?
No. Yeah. No, and she's an investigative journalist who's gotten really interested in the claims that thoughts can heal. And they've done studies with a guy, Gary Schwartz. I think that's his name. Gary Schwartz down at the University of Arizona. I want to go down and meet him. He's just an hour and a half away from where I live, but where they've like testing to see if thoughts can have an impact on leaves or seeds or plants or things. So I think that that's why he's bringing this in as point number 10, attacking mechanistic medicine and saying that people are closed off to alternative forms of healing because he's probably aware of and into these kinds of things. But I just recently, somebody recommended that book to me and I started looking into it. But
this is another thing that's just all materialism. So, you know, the your brain, your thinking, and that is causing a physical effect. So it's material. Mm-hmm. So it can be tested empirically, and everybody, there's all kinds of money in the world now where you've got crazy billionaires who believe all kinds of crazy stuff. And so you could test anything you want. And because it's still all within, you know, a materialist worldview, which is to say we're all, you know,
but it's a redefined materialist worldview, because if what he's saying here is correct, that the materialist worldview says that materiality ends with your cranium, that thoughts don't exist or impact the world outside of your head. And then what you're saying, John, is that you would have to redefine materialism to say that thoughts can actually impact something at a distance, or that if that was able to be proven, that would have to be adopted into the materialist worldview, and you would just have to expand your definition of materialism.
Only if we're talking about the thoughts happening in total isolation and without the patient involved, right? So in other words, the patient is kept in their isolation chamber, and then all of the people with the positive thoughts are praying positive thoughts to them because if the person comes in to the room and holds their hand and does administration, by the way, and it's not only placebo, it's a fact of we are social animals, and there are absolutely effects that happen when a person is, let's say, totally lonely and isolated, and there's all kinds of different ways that ill health results from that. And when a person is loved and needed, that there's all kinds of ways that that positive health happens, right? And sure. So the only kind of way that where we're talking about whether thought at a distance is having an effect is you keep the person isolated in the chamber regardless in a controlled study.
Yeah.
And then the people are, and then you have a whole set of people that are thinking about the one person and nobody's thinking about the other person.
And in the case of these experiments that Lynn McTaggart or whatever her name is and Gary Schwartz did, they weren't doing human subjects. They were doing plants like leaves and seeds. And it was just people at a distance focusing their thoughts on one. And they set up all of these controls. Like the book goes into it. It just bored the hell out of me. but where they were really trying to do this rigorous scientific experiment. And so that was what I was thinking of when I was talking to you. So if I'm understanding what you're saying about materialism is if they were able to demonstrate that something like that worked, then it's not saying that this isn't a materialist worldview. It would demand a redefinition of what the materialist worldview includes.
What it would suggest is that there is some other additional particle like the metachlorian that is actually transmitting from the people in the control group to the person in the thing. So, 'cause it's still empirically based.
Right.
In that way. So that's why I'm saying that also in the end, even though he's pretending to criticize materialism, I think that he's actually just saying that you don't like my materialism,
or this is the current materialist worldview,
or that these things are considered to be good, and so it's not about materialism. So these things are considered to be, we know that we are taboo or not. So acupuncture or whatever the kind of thing that is considered too frou-frou or something like that. But people, I think, do study those things.
Yeah.
Oh, the acupuncture, all homeopathy, all these things have been studied, and they've just been washed out. and there's no prior, the problem fact. Is there's no prior plausibility. There's no mechanism.
I'm going to give you a fun fact. Joseph Smith is responsible for essential oils. Ergo, he starts
how?
A church. They come to the Great Salt Lake. Lots of stuff happens. And then we have fundamentalists. And fundamentalists start Young Living Farms, which is where doTERRA broke off of. And the entire industry started with Mormon fundamentalism. You're welcome.
There you go. Wow.
Lindsay Hanson Park, ladies and gentlemen.
It all comes back to Mormonism. I've been saying it's all about polygamy, John DeLynn. It's all about polygamy.
You have to read the Word of Wisdom, but I think
John DeLynn's a polygamist? Did you just say that John DeLynn's a polygamist?
I did. No, he hates it when I say it's all about polygamy, but it is.
My friend just posted.
Also, fundamentalism started the homeschool movement in the United States, but that's.
Yeah, a friend just said she's listening to the that you have ruined with your year in polygamy podcast, watching The Bachelor and The Bachelorette for her. So thanks a lot.
You're welcome. That's a service that I'm proud of.
Why should that guy make one choice only?
Right.
Yeah.
That's what it. Yeah, that's what he did.
So for any listeners who stuck with us this far and are interested to hear more of what Rupert Sheldrake said, the band talk is on YouTube. You can go find it. I don't think we're going to spend any more time tonight talking about.
Okay,
this.
But I wanted but to
is,
know
is
about,
there like I yeah. So I'm just going to want to go around the horn and just wrap up with any final things that people want to say, and then I want to leave.
I wanted to know about the G that where he was talking about the G data. How they just where he goes to the professor and he's like, yeah, we fixed all those fluctuations because now we just in 72 we agree that's the number, and so we don't really
that's the speed of light, yeah.
Yeah, or that's,
no, that was actually the force of gravity, G.
Yeah.
The G constant.
I want to spend a few moments on the constants of nature too, because these are again assumed to be constant. Things like the gravitational constant, the speed of light, are called the fundamental constants. Are they really constant? Well, when I got interested in this question, I tried to find out. They're given in physics handbooks. Handbooks of physics list the existing fundamental constants, tell you their value. But I wanted to see if they had changed. So I got the old volumes of physical handbooks. I went to the Patent Office Library here in London, and they're the only place I could find that kept the old volumes. Normally people throw them away when the new values come out. They throw away the old ones. When I did this, I found that the speed of light dropped between 1928 and 1945 by about 20 kilometers per second. It's a huge drop because they're given with errors of any fractions of decimal points of error. And yet, all over the world, it dropped, and they were all getting values very similar to each other with tiny errors. And then in 1945, it went up, 48, it went up again. And then people started getting very similar values again. I was very intrigued by this, and I couldn't make sense of it. So I went to see the head of metrology at the National Physical Laboratory in Teddington. Metrology is the science in which people measure constants. And I asked him about this. I said, what do you make of this drop in the speed of light between 1928 and 1945? And he said, oh dear, he said, you've uncovered the most embarrassing episode in the history of our science. So I said, well, could the speed of light have actually dropped? And that would have amazing implications if so. He said, no, of course it couldn't have actually dropped. It's a constant. So, well then how do you explain the fact everyone was finding it going much slower during that period? Is it because they were fudging their results to get what they thought other people should be getting, and the whole thing was just produced in the minds of physicists? He said, we don't like to use the word fudge. I said, well, what do you prefer? He said, well, we prefer to call it intellectual phase locking. So I said, well, if it was going on then, how can we be so sure it's not going on today? And that the present values are produced by intellectual phase locking. And he said, oh, we know that's not the case. I said, how do we know? He said, we've solved the problem. And I said, well, how? He said, well, we fixed the speed of light by definition in 1972. So I said, but it might still change. He said, yes, but we'd never know it because we've defined the meter in terms of the speed of light. So the units had changed with it. So he looked very pleased about that. They'd fixed that problem. But I said, well, then what about big G, the gravitational constant known in the trade as big G? It's written with a capital G, Newton's universal gravitational constant. That's varied by more than 1.3% in recent years. And it seems to vary from place to place and from time to time. And he said, oh, well, those are just errors. And unfortunately, there are quite big errors with big G. So I said, well, what if it's really changing? I mean, perhaps it is really changing. And then I looked at how they do it. What happens is they measure it in different labs. They get different values on different days, and then they average them. And then other labs around the world do the same, and they come out usually with a rather different average. And then the International Committee on Metrology meets every 10 years or so and average the ones from labs around the world to come up with the value of big G. But what if G were actually fluctuating? What if it changed? There's already evidence, actually, that it changes throughout the day and throughout the year. What if the Earth, as it moves through the galactic environment, went through patches of dark matter or other environmental factors that could alter it? Maybe they all change together. What if these errors are going up together and down together? For more than 10 years, I've been trying to persuade metrologists to look at the raw data In fact, I'm now trying to persuade them to put it online on the internet with the dates and the actual measurements and see if they're correlated, to see if they're all up at one time, all down at another. If so, they might be fluctuating together, and that would tell us something very, very interesting. But no one has done this. They haven't done it because G's are constant. There's no point looking for changes. You see, here's a very simple example of where a dogmatic assumption actually inhibits inquiry.
I thought it was really more funny.
But the 1972 thing where they changed the definition, they made a uniform definition and then they changed the unit of measurement to match the speed of light so that if there ever was a variation with the speed of light, you wouldn't know because the measurement is changing along with it. That's what Matt was talking about in 1972. And then he goes on to talk about the big G gravity thing as something separate.
Yeah, I think it was that they said, maybe you're right. Regardless, is that true? That was my question when I heard that.
Do you believe this guy? Is he a credible source?
That's my fucking question,
bro. You think that conversation went just as he described?
Ad hominem fallacy, which translates to argument against the man, is a fallacy in which one attacks the characteristics or beliefs of the person rather than the claim the person presents.
But even so, I'm asking if he did pose a proposal, which is why not just post the raw data online? We should have every place that has, you know, an instrument that's taking these instruments just say, here's what it is. And then people can look at it. If there's fluctuations, then, you know, what he specifically said, I recall, is that was there. We could then see, are these fluctuations, you know, are the ups and downs happening in all of these labs, thus saying something about the gravitational pull, as I understood it.
And he also speculated that maybe the Earth is passing through a concentrated patch of dark energy, and that's creating fluctuations in gravity or something like that. But that we would never be able to come to that conclusion scientifically if we didn't first accept the fact that there could be fluctuations with gravity. And so that's an example that he gives as to how this materialist worldview can inhibit scientific discovery, because people aren't willing to or interested in supposing that there could be fluctuations in big G gravity.
If you believe that there's a fluctuation in big G gravity, that's still materialism. So again, this is,
and I don't understand how that helps his theory. I'm asking a question.
Is this true? And if so, we should be fucking measuring the data and putting it on
the internet and letting everybody look at it and then try to and analyze it themselves, because people are so able to understand climate change on the data and have real truthful
information because people interpret it wrong. I mean, that's not what you're saying, I don't think.
Yeah, it is. Well, people are not equipped to interpret it.
Then I will quarrel with you, because at that point, my question is just, I was interested in what he's saying about dogma. Oh, sorry, are we wrapping up? Because I can wrap. I can start by wrapping up.
No, say what you want to say. That's fine. We're here.
No, this is kind of wrapping up. Okay. But as I was listening to it, like I said, I don't really understand these things. I didn't, when he was just listing the dogmas, I had no base to be like, oh yeah, that's a total dogma. It's like, that seems like it's a reasonable assumption. Explain why. It was when he got into the weeds specifically about the constants that I found what he was saying compelling. And my question was, is that true? Because again, this is a fucking TED talk. So I'm not just going to say, oh, Rupert Murdoch, whatever this guy's name, Sheldrake.
Rupert Murdoch.
It said on a TED talk, blah, therefore blah must be true. And I'm not just going to adopt this guy as my prophet because he's on TED. So that was the part that I found the most interesting, is when he provided the examples in, for example, saying, you know, these constants. When he did that, I said, oh yeah, that makes sense to me. We should absolutely be measuring these things and consistently evaluating these things. So the speed of light thing that he said, and the G data. I just like saying G because it feels like it's like a party drug or something.
I thought you were gonna go somewhere else with that.
You need to not believe him because he's on a TED talk. You need to believe him because he's on a banned TED talk.
A banned TED talk. Yes.
TED talk. Yeah.
I'm with Matt. Like I feel like what he had to say about dogma was what resonated with me, but I think I agree with the rest of you on he is kind of a bad messenger. And so I'm going to hold out hope that this is just a long con, like I said, performance art. And at the very end, he's going to unveil that like he was the point he was trying to make all along. And then I'll respect him.
I read Sean Carroll's response to his TED talk specific, but only on one point. Sean Carroll's an actual physicist, and he's a biochemist.
Shots fired there, Randy.
what is that?
I just pictured you on Mean Girls for a second. You're like, he is an actual physicist.
Seriously. He said just back up. Because when he gets in the weeds, I'm actually surprised, Matt, that you found that compelling, because I found that the most laughable part
of the fucking whole talk. Know. My question was this. Is what he said true?
No.
Okay. Well, okay. Explain
so
it.
I'll just accept
Randy as my prophet. Tell me why, Randy.
Well, Randy, as you know, informed by Sean Carroll, a very famous physicist in America.
Yeah.
He said, his first point was, if a physicist can prove that the speed of light fluctuates, they would win the fucking Nobel Prize. Okay. And B,
that's not good evidence.
That's not good evidence. No, but because if
the claim is that you by definition,
he's saying there's a
you
conspiracy.
Can never
conspiracy among the scientists to suppress the data.
Yes. He's saying it's a conspiracy, you motherfucker. So it's a great argument against a conspiracy.
No, but if what he's saying is true, that there was this definition in 1972 about the speed of light, and then the measurement,
not
the meter.
No, you're mixing G with speed of light. Speed of light was...
Maybe I'm mixing it,
but I'm not.
I will grant you a warrior's death.
Well, we fixed the speed of light by definition in 1972.
Flawless victory.
Damn, I'm good.
My point is, if his claims are true, that there is a protection against the constant, and that if the way of measuring it has been rigged so that you could never detect a fluctuation, even if one exists, then saying that a scientist who discovered it would win the Nobel Peace Prize, it's not addressing whether or not his claims are true, that the system's been rigged.
No, but it's claiming that it would be something that scientists would be motivated to find out.
But my question is,
let me finish.
Okay.
Let me finish.
Matt's having an existential crisis. Just give me.
I just want to give it to me.
Okay, so the speed of light from the 1800s to 1947 fluctuated, but never outside of the margin of error. And then in 1947, it fluctuated to where it is now, like 299 meters per second or something like that. 299 million meters per second. What is more likely, Glenn, that we got better at our tools, got more sophisticated, and we got better at measuring the speed of light till we got it right in 1947, or that the speed of light has been changing since the 1800s?
Well, you need to give me the third option there, which is what is his claim, because I would say
his claim
of course,
that they're suppressing the speed of light.
His claim that the meter that's used to measure the speed of light is now defined by the speed of light itself. So if the speed of light changes, the unit of measure that you're using to measure it wouldn't detect it because it changes too. That's the claim.
And I feel sorry for any physicist listening to this right now.
You can still measure it in feet, Glenn.
Look, I am not committed one way or the other to the conclusion here. I'm telling you, this is his claim. So if we're going to address his claim, we need to address his claim. And the options that you gave me didn't address his claim. So if there are physicists listening, help us educate me. I want to be educated, but you know, like what you said didn't do it.
The question I'd like to know
The speed of light is the speed of fucking light.
Dude, I don't understand the speed of light.
For fuck's sake, the speed of fucking light.
So what if? That almost sounds
circular, Andy.
What if?
It's a tautology.
What would the problem be of a very variable speed in the speed of light? Why would that create a problem if that were actually the case?
I don't even know why this matters. What if the fucking speed of light fluctuates? What if G fluctuates? How does that help Sheldrake? How does this fucking even matter?
That I just asked that question too, so neither of us know.
It's like the ratio of matter, you know, like how much matter there is in the universe. That's why I was asking. Does he want to say that there's more, or does he want to say, you know, in a, so yeah, he likes the idea that the speed of light and the gravitational The gravitational non-constant is not constant, right? But it's not clear why. I don't know.
All this is a way to just kind of throw mud on the whole enterprise, to basically create doubt in the scientific community. That's all this is.
No, Randy, all it's trying to say is that's why God is in the gaps.
Bingo. I'm done. Actually, I do have a final point.
Okay.
So my final point is that paradigm shifts in science need to happen all the time, and they actually do happen. And just serendipitously, I listened to, guess what, a TED Talk this morning. Had nothing to do. I wasn't doing it for preparation, but it just was serendipitous. And it was a cancer researcher who talked about what happened in, I think it was about the 40s when antibiotics were discovered, and how that changed the paradigm in the field of medicine. It's only one field of science, the field of medicine. They had this really seductive solution to a problem. You get a bacterial infection, you get sick, you give them antibiotics, it kills the bacteria, you feel better. It's like this lock and key, and that actually kind of cemented the paradigm of medicine and how they dealt with problems. Well, he's a cancer researcher. He says, like, what was the first way we dealt with cancer? He called it, there's a shoot down approach, or there's a build up approach. And he says, we got locked into the shoot down. So when we first started treating cancer, we shot the cancer cells. We tried to kill the cancer cells. And he said, we needed a paradigm shift. And he said, according to him, 5 years ago, there was a bit of a paradigm shift where it's like, let's not just shoot down, let's build up. And so his research was talking about how about we make the rest of the body less fertile soil for metastatic spread of a cancer tumor. And so now research is going in that direction. And paradigm shifts are very important. You know, science is a human enterprise. Yes, there's a lot of shit. You got p-hacking that's going on. Do you guys know what p-hacking is?
P-values?
No. It refers to the p-value, but p-hacking. P-hacking is when you start off an experiment with 40 subjects. You don't get a p-value below 0.05, which is you can't publish your paper.
Yeah, you're not hitting the statistics.
You're not hitting the statistics. So you go to 45. No, it's close. Let's go to 50. Oh, we hit it. We hit the p-value of 0.05. Let's publish. That is a problem in science that's been recently discovered. You got the replication crisis in social psychology that's been recently discovered. There's all kinds of problems in science, but it still remains our best tool. And I'm not saying he thinks that science isn't a good tool, but he's just some asshole with an axe to grind because he's not been taken seriously. All these problems are problems. I acknowledge that they're problems. Science isn't this, my God. You know, it isn't my profit, but it's a tool that I value and I believe is our best. It's our best tool. It's the best thing we got.
So I don't know this cat, man. I have no idea who he was. I came in with no, and I have almost zero knowledge when it comes to physics. I mean, I'm really dumb. I'm uneducated. I'm not familiar with physics, right? But what I walked away from is the realization that for the last 42 years, pretty much, or at least about the last, certainly the last 30 years of my life, I've been pretty damn cocksure about what conclusions I've drawn based on where I was in the moment. And I found that to really be the case, even, you know, very recently, outside of Mormonism, where I have adopted this science, this concept of science, this worldview of science, as to say, that's what I believe in, because I am atheist and I'm a hardcore atheist, and I still am. I am atheist. But I recognize those same thought patterns and that same arrogance now applied to the science that I just don't understand. And even if I understood physics, I wouldn't understand you know, a lot of things about consciousness and perception. And I've been listening to this week, Sam Harris came out with an episode on consciousness that I found really interesting. And Russell Brand did one on consciousness with Brian Cox, and real interesting stuff that starts dovetailing with some of these concepts where, you know, Brian Cox was talking about intuition and how that there's now starting to be evidence of it being, you know, connected to those people who are able to really be in tune with their system, with their membrane here between the heart and the head and the brain, interpreting all these signals from your body. And the more somebody can kind of become in tune with that, you know, those are people that they're finding would be referred to as kind of having a gut instinct and these types of things. And my understanding is Brian Cox is a real physicist, maybe not, but it at least causes me to want to push pause on my own personal, confidence in capital T truth on things, and at least be open to other ideas, and at least not be so arrogant and closed off to say, okay, I think I have the answer to how the universe works, because I know I don't. And I did have that same opinion when I was Mormon. I had that same opinion when I was stridently ex-Mormon. I'm now feeling I've broken out of that a little bit more. And now I know Dick, and I like that position a little better. And Rupert Murdoch Redrake, whatever this dude's name is, helped along those ways are long, helped a lot in kind of helping me crystallize that I don't want to have any form of dogmas. You know, even now as a non-religious person, as I did with a religious, as a religious person. And that's the principle that I took away from this message, not, hey, I believe that psychics are now directing dogs to interpret, you know, to heal people that are feeling sad about, you know, whatever. That's not what I'm saying, but I'm saying I want to approach the world with more questions than answers, because I think there are more that we understand less than we portray. That was my takeaway from Rupert Murdoch.
That was beautiful, Matt. And I didn't want to jump in and besmirch it, but we're kind of too far away from the point of this, even you guys remembering it. But I still want to say it.
So you will.
So I will. What I'm getting from what you said was that you love Dick.
So do I. There's no shame in that. So
right.
That's good.
Okay.
I'm not ashamed.
All right.
I'd
like to open up the idea, you know, maybe just, there's no man or woman. There is just that which feels good. Maybe that's a point. I'll open. I mean, questions, right? Not answers.
But I would say, Matt, there's nothing wrong with having a healthy, justified confidence in scientific, robust scientific consensus, like global warming. You know.
Yeah. No, and see, this is another. This becomes dogma to me. Global warming is another one, and I'll say why. Global warming's a reality.
Oh, I forget that. You're Republican. Oh,
I mean, I'm actually not. But this is a real problem here, because the more I get to know about climate change, the more questions I have about, okay, even if we accept that it's true, that doesn't mean true, whatever that means, right? It's having an effect that's catastrophic, that it will be the end of us if some intervention isn't done. Even I accept that as true. That doesn't that isn't the end of the inquiry. That's the beginning of the inquiry. To me, that's the same thing as does God exist? That's not an interesting question. It's, does the technology that we currently have exist to get us to a place where we can have impact, or does it make more economic sense to wait because the technology will be there where we will get have a greater effect on climate change, you know, if we start in 5 years rather than starting now? These are all questions that I think are good to have and that I want to have. And these are conversations we can't have anymore because you say, well, something about climate change. And I say, recently I've been very disenfranchised with systems and our system in general. The more disenfranchised I've gotten with our political system, the more I tend to react with the cardinal sin of, Trump's horrible. Everyone knows my position on him, but how much better was Hillary really when we're talking about the system, the neocon, you know, corporation, if what I believe in is, really just helping the poor. So for me, there isn't a difference between Trump and Hillary if there's another option that is absolutely aligned with my values. So this is where it does become more complicated. And the less answers I have, and the less confident I am in my understanding of these things, the less dogmatic I become, and then the more polarized I become because I'm a man without a country and I'm a man without a tribe. And I'm seeing that more and more happening the more I break down my own dogmas. And I start retracting a bit from my current tribes with these things. And I think these are still principles we all hold, but I mean, that's what I'm experiencing. And that's what I think is happening certainly on so fucking social media, because it always comes back to that, right? But really what it means is we're not taking time to really try to break down and understand the world with complexity. And the world is so fucking complex.
But Matt, that's where I have almost something quite like religious faith in the scientific method. I mean, the point of that is to be self-correcting. So I think that is the yes and to me. Like I think this man has a good point, and I think he's probably a terrible messenger. Mm-hmm. And I think now I would like to talk about why we cannot and should not vaccinate our kids. Do we have time for that?
Oh my
that's possible. That's a valid position to take. You know, anything's possible.
Are you trying
I don't
to
know
kill
anything.
Us?
Is it because vaccination started with the polygamist, Lindsay?
That's not what I'm saying. See, thank you, Randy, for
saying that. I'm doing a really sarcastic straw man.
Okay, because that, but that I that is absolutely how what I could said is interpreted and will be relayed back to me. And because I so
well, I'm
you're,
glad
you're,
I did it here then first.
Thanks. But so yeah man, yes, things are known and we observe things. That's the thing. Once you start questioning things, it doesn't mean nothing can be known and I'm going to start walking out of my second story window because gravity might not exist today. I mean,
it
might fluctuate.
But so that's not what I'm saying, but I'm still saying we are all
I get the spirit of what you're saying.
Dogma shit, and that's what Rupert Murdoch taught me.
Even if stop saying Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch. The owner of Fox News. He's Australian. This guy's British.
Is that Rupert Murdoch? He is the Fox guy, right?
Yeah. This is the very...
Hey, we're at the very end. Did you see Harvey Weinstein got slapped a couple times here in Scottsdale?
In Scottsdale, yeah. What's he doing in Scottsdale?
He's doing that... he's at that sex addict place in Wickenburg with, like, Duchovny and Kevin Spacey and all the celebrities and rich people go when they're getting in trouble and need to say they're going to rehab.
It's the new Ben Ford Clinic.
Did you track that place out on your mission, Randy?
No.
Hello, This is Penelope.
Ashley.
Olga from Moscow.
Brittany, Miss Arlington, Texas.
Destiny.
As woman, I know only way to be on podcast is be man.
And I'm recording this in my party line voice.
As a woman, this is my best chance of getting on the podcast.
You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com.
And if you really like what you hear,
give the quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes
so that we can all live in a more peaceful world and a better tomorrow like I did.
Oh, did I ever?
Anyone for the closing prayer?
Lindsay hasn't summed up. I haven't summed up.
I just wanted to sum up with why we shouldn't vaccinate our kids, and Randy won't let me. So that's.
Oh my God!
It's too dangerous of a message. If I find out,
tongue in cheek.
Any of you have done a podcast where you supported
the anti-vax? We're all going to die if you say
that's the new direction of Infants on Thrones, Randy.
Oh, I came back.
Chakras. Essential oils, vagina steaming, and anti-vax. Oh, and butter.
Oh my God.
You guys, is they used to not know that vaccines caused autism. And
oh my God. Stop saying it to us.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me vaccines cause autism?
Matt, why has autism?
We don't know dick about autism, all right?
That's true. It is a newer, if you look at how.
You remember how many autistic people there were in second grade?
Yeah, almost none.
And then think of how many there are now.
Oh, yeah.
And how much. What's happened between now and then?
We also went to the moon. Maybe that caused it. Maybe back then. Yeah.
I know your heart pressure and your blood pressure is up, and I have some lavender oil that you're gonna rub in.
And we didn't go to the moon, it was staged, Randy.
Right.
Oh, I forgot.
Stanley Kubrick. Come staged. On. Everybody knows that.
the earth is flat too. There's nothing too stupid anymore to believe.
What I want to say, I think John wants to actually this guy. Sum up. Yeah, I want to
I want
say
to actually that, sum up. Let's bring it. Let's get serious, you guys.
So this guy who pretends he's fighting against materialism, which I think is actually an actual issue that we are only thinking of ourselves in this paradigm where we are only thinking of ourselves as robots and we're only thinking of ourselves as programmed and we can't get beyond our analogies that way. I think that one of the things that I think that does absolutely affect, like how we deal with ourselves in the humanities, our life and our meaning and all that kind of thing. But I think that this guy wants to fight it all out against physics, and actually go and attack that on the ground of, like the gravitational constant isn't constant and all this kind of stuff, and that ESP is happening with the dogs. And then he actually ultimately, even in this particular podcast, he's saying things like, once you teach a rat in Britain to do something, then it turns out that all the rats in Australia learn it faster, as if rats are a universal constant. And that
that's the morphic resonance. Yeah.
And how are rats more connected? Anyway, it's still.
That's Sheldrake's thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's definitely doing all the things. But I think that, the flip side of it, this is when also physicists, and other kinds of people like that, then go out and like speculate on humanities and social problems and all this kind of thing, because they are too fixed into this kind of thing. And there is actually a whole bunch of thought that has gone into philosophy, humanity, and why we're doing these kind of things. And this is the reason why even famous, let's say, astronomers or physicists who then speculate on these kind of things, end up saying really stupid shit in this exact same way that this guy, shouldn't be fighting on this kind of ground about materialism. So materialism definitely should be informing our worldview of the material universe and how, I don't know, like rats do stuff, and this kind of thing, and gravity, and we can measure it, and we can find out if there's fluctuations and all that kind of thing, and there's nothing stopping us from doing that, but there is the other half of it, which is how are we ourselves finding meaning in life, and physicists aren't necessarily particularly informed in helping us find meaning and value and not being depressed and all that kind of thing, you know? So,
yeah, there's nothing. I mean, the biggest tell in this whole thing is this is a biochemist picking a fight with physicists about physics. That's your red flag. And there's so many, examples of this in history. Linus Pauling wins a Nobel Prize in his field. Then he goes off the rails and decides that vitamin C is the cure all for everything. And he just finished his life just as a total joke and a quack. Because he got outside of his field of expertise and thought, because I won a Nobel Prize in this, I can master this I can talk about anything. Your example.
Like,
there's
that
nothing
sounds like the
better.
Argument that we were making fun of earlier about vaccines in second grade, like the cause and effect stuff, because this one guy did this with vitamin C and he laughed off.
I'm just saying, be cautious.
What?
Yeah, it happened. What? Really? That was hard to follow?
Yeah, no, right, it was hard to accept. I followed
it. What we're saying is that Richard Dawkins maybe isn't a great philosopher.
And maybe
even
he
though
shouldn't
he might
talk,
well have been a biological scientist or whatever he is, geneticist back in the 70s or something like that. And so he's gone on and said all kinds of stupid stuff. You know, that's what
I'd like to hear him talk more about feminism.
Yeah, Richard Dawkins is a great source of feminist sensibilities. So my point, Glenn, is climate science all the time.
I
is
shouldn't have said anything. I was mostly playing around. And
the real,
wasn't
the
good.
Real, the only outspoken. Okay, I guess I can. I'm just talking now.
Well, it was wonderful to recreate Infants on Thrones after all this time.
We just got it.
Dude, I had a
I'm really
blast.
Happy to be
I love listening to John. I love listening to Randy. It's been too long. It gives me an energy. You feed me in ways that other people don't, Randy.
Wow, you're making me blush.
I love you at first sight. back at Marley's that I just passed by the other day. And
Marley's.
I received another dose of that tonight, and it's been too long, Randy. And Glenn, I always love what you have to say.
And Tom, I joke
about. We love
about,
a surly silence, Tom. We love
where
it.
Where the fuck is Tom?
Strong, silent Tom.
I had a lot of fun here, man. But, man, I am not smart when it comes to science stuff.
What? Why are you giving Lindsay the cold shoulder?
I already said Lindsay.
Yeah, what gives?
What gives?
Fine.
What gives?
I already said Lindsay.
No, you didn't.
Here. That's
you started with Brandy, and then you went
roll
to
back.
Me, and then John.
Roll back.
I was paying attention.
Roll back. Loved everything Lindsay had to say. We should make her an official infant.
What about John? You didn't say anything about John.
Now I'm believing you. Because
I am paper's ground. I watch them grow. They learn much more than I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.